deepest darkness of Dromund-Kos, to the smelly sewers of Nar Shaddaa, to the brightest light that shine on Tython. This is Flashpoint.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 35 of Flashpoint. It's a dynamic duo on air tonight, so unfortunately Mark and Ed aren't able to be with us unless they suddenly log on, in which case they will be able to be with us. So, it's the dynamic duo, the most dynamic duo since Batman and Robin, Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey, Carrie-Anne Kennelly and Mike Walsh. It's David and Simon. Simon, how are you?
I'm good, my young chum, because I sure as hell ain't going to be Robin.
And I don't know that Mike Walsh and Carrie-Anne Kennelly ever hung out either. I think that was a bad one.
Well, doesn't Carrie-Anne Kennelly eat males of the species? She's like a praying mantis, I think.
Yeah. Our hearts go out to her, though, because I know someone was telling me they read in one of the trashy magazines she has breast cancer, but a treatable form, thankfully. So you get all the important news here. So, yeah, just Simon and I, and it should be fun. So let's jump straight into Republic news.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Republic news.
The obvious huge bit of news is that day after tomorrow, Star Wars The Old Republic 1.3 Allies update hits the game. So it's been on PTS for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, Simon?
I think three.
Yeah, around that 3 mark. So obviously testing's gone well and they're ready to roll it out. So Tuesday's the night. So for East Coast Australians, it's, I don't have this in front of me now, but 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. So 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. for our WA friends and 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. for our New Zealand friends, and the rest of you can work out your own damn time zones. So we've talked a lot last episode about 1.3 and what's coming up, and I know they altered the patch notes a little bit, but essentially what they originally announced is going live, and a lot of the conversation is just people getting really excited about the LFG tool. And I assume your excitement hasn't changed, Simon, about what you're looking forward to?
That would be a fair assessment. I've tried the LFG tool with limited success, mainly because every time I seem to go on the PTS, there's one person on the Imperial fleet, and that's usually me. So, yeah. So, not so good. Looking for groups is difficult when you're the only person there. But the functionality, using it, the fact that you can select a wide range of flashpoints and so forth, It looks like a really good little tool. I think a lot of people are going to be very happy with it.
So, I mean, it's probably hard, as you said, because the PTS was so low. It's pointless me asking how long it took you to find a group. So I suppose the real test will come Wednesday when we all give it a go. And I would have thought none of us will have to wait long because everyone and their dog will be trying it out at first. So,
yeah, I think it's going to go fairly well. From what I've heard from other articles and other sources, it's pretty good. You don't have to wait more than 5 minutes, 10 minutes tops, and there's plenty of stuff you can do in the meantime while that's happening.
Exactly. So, yeah, and as I said last episode, I think the whinging around having an LFG tool essentially dissipated when they didn't make a cross server, and we haven't heard a lot more about the mega server stuff, although I suppose these server transfers, which we'll get onto in a minute, sort of have developed that. But yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be waiting more than 5 or 10 minutes, although I'm assuming there'll be the usual challenges around, you know, haven't got enough healers around or waiting for a tank or that sort of stuff. But and all us consulars will be standing around in a group just waiting for some other idiots to join us.
Yeah, but yeah, but it's not going to fundamentally change anything. I don't, not in that regard, at least. But I don't think that cross server LFG really would have made much of a difference to people playing on Australian or Oceanic servers anyway, because the numbers are high enough and it's not really an issue. The cross-server LFG, I think, was more of a concern for people in North America and Europe because of the low pop servers that are out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the low population stuff, as said, has been sorted to a large extent by the server mergers. So we may as well move straight on to those. So, I mean, over the last 2 weeks, there's been lots of server transfers. BioWare dribbled them out bit by bit, and there was a bit of griping about that initially, but I think once most people realised the way they're approaching it, there was a bit more patience, and it's gone pretty well. I just know, even on the Australian servers, that you've just, even though, correct me if I'm wrong, Simon, last time I looked at the list, the transfers to Dalboro and Co. weren't an option, but it just seems like there's more people online now.
Yeah, I think part of that's probably to do with the anticipation of 1.3 dropping as much as anything else. I think a lot of people are looking forward to some of the features that are in there. I mean, the weighted armor, I think, is worth getting back into the game for anyway. But, yeah.
Yeah, agreed. And, I mean, just looking at one of the most fascinating things for me has been the old unofficial servers, so the Harbinger being one of the obvious ones. Just seeing the huge focus on getting people merged over to there. And on the forums, you're seeing a lot of people saying, hey, there's a lot more people. I'm seeing 100, 110 people on in my area at a time, and they're loving it, and it's only going to help the game. And as you said, the anticipation for 1.3 won't be hurting that either. So
no, definitely not. I think that's what it really comes down to, is it's an MMO, and you need people for an MMO. The whole name thing, I think, is the wrinkle that's probably bothering people most. That does seem to be causing some heartache, and I mean that.
Yeah,
there's people out there hurting because they've had to change their names, and I think part of the problem with that is that BioWare haven't been able to do any housekeeping of the server, the destination servers. So if you've got your character, I don't know, name X on your origin server, and then you move and someone's already got X on the other server, obviously you can't have that. The real rub is when that name is taken by someone who's no longer playing.
Yeah, and that's the thing I've seen the most on the forums too, is if there could have been some, as you said, housekeeping where if they haven't logged in the last 6 months or 3 months or whatever, that they don't have the claim to that name where there's another claim on it, or there could have been some better ways to go around it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's what DC Universe Online did. If you had a name and it was already, when they smushed everything together for the mega servers, if your name was already being used on, or there was a name conflict, then what they would do is if you had played longer with it and you were an active subscriber, and maybe if you're a higher level, depending on number of hours spent in the game, you would get that name. And everyone else would get to keep that name underscore the name of the server they came from. And I think there's more potential for... You can learn to live with that a bit more. And maybe what they should have done is taken some of the brought in some new servers, just half a dozen of them, clean with nothing on them, and then put those folk into there. That would cut down on the number of conflicts and redundant conflicts that you're getting from people who are no longer subbed. But again, I don't know. That's probably got its own issues.
Yeah, it's an issue. I mean, yeah, they're in a bit of a no-win situation, but I agree a little bit more housekeeping could have removed some of the angst. I mean, I doubt anyone's unsubscribed based on not having their name, although to a lot of people, their name is a big one. And I know I'd be pissed if someone had taken Wheeze and Henry McGurk and Squirt, and I was surprised that no one had.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, what are the odds?
And also Toros Dave, my highly original trooper name. which has now joined Rogue Squadron. Big shout out to the Rogue Squadron guys on Dalborough. So I've joined a guild. So, yeah, just for my trooper. And I've already warned the guys there, guys and girls there, that I'll be one of the most unreliable, unsociable guild members ever, but still looking to playing a role.
Oh, well, if someone's anyone's looking for an unsociable, unreliable person,
You're available as well.
Give me an invitation to your guild.
Oh, maybe we should get you on Rogue Squadron. I'll talk to the GM.
But have you got an Imperial character?
Yeah, I do, but only at something like level 4. I have now you're testing me. I think I have an Inquisitor and an Agent, but one of them's on the PTS.
Right. Okay. Well.
Oh, yeah, because I think Rogue Squadron have a Empire Mirror Guild off the top of my head. I can't remember which one.
No, not the point I was going to make.
Oh, okay.
Ha! No, the point I was going to make was you want to make sure that you've got a little bit on both sides there if you want to start having a go for HK when he becomes available.
Oh, yeah. So, because there's a whole bunch of legacy interactions and stuff to get that, isn't there?
Mm, and it sounds like you need someone on both. You need a character on both sides to be able to get him.
Yeah, I shall work on that. I mean, I'm working on it purely out of a selfish viewpoint too, that I've had a couple of comments quite rightly from readers on the site saying, why are all your bloody screenshots of Republic areas? And I mean, obviously there are common areas on different planets, but so I'm also leveling up an Empire person just so I can actually have some decent shots of Drummond Cast and so on. So
there are no decent shots of Drummond
Cast. Nah, true. And you like it? Like how I said Drummond Cast and so on, because I haven't leveled my character beyond there, so I don't know what comes after that.
Well, it's interesting. Well, okay. Well, look, most of my characters are Empire, so if you need any screenshots, let me know.
Yeah, so it's all good.
It is.
Yeah, server transfers, I feel ignorant again. I don't know that they're actually complete. I know they're just saying they're constantly monitoring things and they'll keep opening up opportunities as they arise. So you happen to be stuck on another server, but I doubt they're going to offer them to Dalborough and Master Darnala and co. In the near future, because we're doing well with populations anyway.
Yeah, and the transfers will continue for a while yet, because they'll be doing the, hey, it's a really good idea for you to transfer, enjoy more people. And then they'll have to start getting out their pointy stick and nudging people who are camping on the increasingly dead servers.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what the future holds for those servers, but if someone thinks that they're going to have their guild and nothing else on that server, so hey, join us. We've got our own server. Kind of crap.
Yeah, they're not going to wear that.
Folks, I'd get while the getting's good if I were you.
Indeed. And, yeah, I would have thought once they've got through all this, then they'll start looking at paid transfers as an ongoing option, I would have thought.
They probably will, but I think the dust is going to have to settle from this first. And because there's a whole bunch of stuff that's got to get sorted out. I mean, the naming is just part of it. There are other technical issues, because I'm pretty sure we're right in thinking that it's still a pretty manual process. Although, having said that, that's one of the things that I have heard a lot, is that it's very fast. You can be moved over in like 5-10 minutes. It's quick.
Yeah.
So whatever they're doing quickly.
Yeah. No, it's good. It could have been worse, put it that way. And, I mean, I was pleased that Australia or Oceanic players were the guinea pigs, and we obviously, you know, helped them learn from some mistakes, and it's gone smoother this time and will only improve. So, good. We're going to move on to something that you've got a nice little teaser. So I know we're going to talk about community Q&A, but I've just decided unilaterally that the last two community Q&As were boring as batshit and I can't be asked talking about them unless you had something you wanted to talk about them, Simon.
No, because I've sort of pretty much already covered the most interesting thing, and that was from the one on the 15th, which was Daniel Erickson hinting about you need what is he exactly?
About HK.
Yeah, most people will need to have a 50 of one faction and at least a mid-level character from the other faction.
Yeah.
So I think that's the most interesting thing in there. I mean, the one on the 22nd, I sort of slipped into a coma briefly on that one because I'm not terribly interested on loot stats.
No, no. So, yeah, let's just skip past that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's time for you to do... You've got a nice little audio teaser for the next segment. So, 3, 2, 1, go.
Wrong. No, you can't do that. To-
1, 2, 3, go. That sounded very dramatic. So what's the teaser for, Simon?
3, 2, play.
You sound a bit like Ed there. That was spooky.
What? I sounded like I live in Canada.
Yeah. You just had that voice.
Oh,
free to play. Yeah. Aside from 1.3, actually, I'd argue the free to play stuff's been even more of a... got more coverage than 1.3 coming up over the last couple of weeks, and we certainly covered it in detail. So it's all based on one BioWare minion. Was it Emmanuel someone? I can't be bothered looking it up. But someone in an interview with a UK gaming magazine basically made some comments that allude to the fact that they weren't ruling out free-to-play. By the time I got onto it, it was only a few hours after it had come to light. The story, the preview of the interview, because it was for a printed magazine, isn't that quaint? So it was a preview on the website of this gaming magazine. They pulled it by the time I got on it, but obviously thanks to Google and Google caching sites, I was able to find it. And he just, you know, it was a very bland sort of statements, but with enough hints in them that I can see why people thought that there was no, you know, no ruling out of free to play.
Well, it was classic BioWare. It was a bit too open. Yes. It was the lead designer or a lead designer, Emmanuel
Lucinci or whatever.
Yeah. And what was pulled was basically just a teaser, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It was just a couple of key quotes from the interview.
And the quote I think that got most people's blood itching was, quote, "The MMO market is very dynamic and we need to be dynamic as well. Unless people are happy with what they have, they are constantly demanding updates, new modes and situations. So we are looking at free to play, but I can't tell you in much detail. We have to be flexible and adapt to what's going on."
And so the reason people got upset by that, is it because of, well, instead of people demanding content all the time, we'll go free to play so we only have to update every now and again? That's one way you could read that.
Yeah, it is. But then it's difficult to know what was he responding to. Is he talking about the free to play to 15, or is he talking about something bigger and broader? You know, it's, you could almost just completely ignore it. There was another mention made by, I can't remember who it was, but it was basically more to the investment market by one of EA's bigwigs. And he didn't give any kind of time frame, but what he did say indicated that any such move would be quite a way off if it happened at all.
Which seems like an obvious approach. I mean, they've got to recoup some of their costs first.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely that, and there's a lot of other stuff that has to go into it. Just bringing up DC Universe Online again, when they went free to play, I'm not sure how much back end stuff they needed to do. Obviously, there would have been a fair bit of regearing of stuff, but they have one big advantage, which is Sony Online Entertainment, and Sony's already got a sort of a cash online cash store. Things set up for other games they use. So, you know, they've got Sony Online Cash or something like that, or Station Cash or something. So integrating that into the DCOO game would have been probably fiddly, but it was still an asset that the company had. I don't think BioWare wouldn't have anything like that. You couldn't really leverage off Origin to do that because you'd need something more specific to the game. So if they are going to make a move like that, I think there's an awful lot of fluffing around behind the scenes that would have to happen before it's even something they could look at.
Agreed. And I think it's at least a year off and probably longer than that. So, but I can see why. I mean, what was said was pretty sensible in that you wouldn't rule it out because it is changing, and there aren't that many people paying for subs anymore. WoW obviously still has a fairly good fan base, and people are paying monthly subs for other things. But I think the days of that model are starting to decline, unless something absolutely radical changes with the model. So if some MMO comes out with a whole new way to approach gameplay, that people go, yeah, I'm happy to pay $15 or $20 a month just to have that totally different experience. But this doesn't appear, unless Blizzard pull that out with their next-gen MMO, as they call it, in quotation marks.
What, Titan or whatever they're calling
it?
Yeah.
I saw someone posted a link. Blizzard have a whole bunch of jobs going, and anyone out there, there's nothing for locally, but pretty much every other country in the world has some jobs going, whether it's UK, US, Asia. They've got a lot of jobs, and I know one of the big headings they had was, you know, next-gen MMO, which would be Titan. So, you know, there's still stuff going on there, but I still can't see it being a, you know, total game changer.
I mean, I think it's Darth Hayter had quite an interesting interview with Daniel Erickson, who was actually provided some useful information and also some of his customary "I'm so mysterious, now you see me, now you don't" kind of nonsense. But it's quite clear that even given the layoffs that have occurred, and the drop in subscriber numbers, an awful lot of work and preparation has been done, especially as far as the writing and the voiceover stuff, which, and let's face it, the voiceover is probably the most time-consuming and expensive, one of the most expensive and time-consuming components. A lot of that for stuff they have already planned for quite a way seems to have already been done. So in a lot of ways, it's mostly implementation for the most part. Obviously, there's going to be some asset creation that's got to go into it, but it looks like they've probably got a bit of stuff up their sleeve. I mean, the way they talk about Makeb, the new planet.
Oh, yes, the new planet, yep.
Yeah, it sounds like they're really trying to focus on that providing a sort of return to form, or at least that's the way he's talking about it. Although, you know, considering he finished the interview by, what did he say? The future is always in motion.
Oh, that sounds like something Julia Gillard would say.
No, actually, it's something Yoda would say.
Oh, true. Except he'd say motion, the future is in, or something.
Yeah, well, he actually said it in Empire Strikes Back.
Really? There you go.
Yeah, it's just, you know, after Luke's training and after he drops all that stuff.
Yep.
And he sees Luke and – not Luke, Han and Leia in pain.
Oh, that's right, yep.
And Luke says something along the lines of
– will they die?
And then Yoda scrunches his face up and goes
– difficult to see. Always in motion is the future.
See, always in motion is the future. I wasn't far off. So, how did you have that standing by? Just for our listeners, that wasn't, well, at least from my viewpoint, wasn't pre-prepared. I'm impressed.
I do actually read, when they're posted ahead of time, I do actually read.
You prepare for the show.
I try to have a few things up my sleeve just in case.
You're one step ahead of me then. I just log on 10 minutes before the show and go, okay, what are we talking about this week? So, good work. Love it.
But I thought it was an appropriate point to make because I don't. He just frustrates me because he tries to be so damn inscrutable.
Yes.
We just want information. Say something useful, Daniel, or shut up, please.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, and it's only early days, I'm not seeing a radical change in the communication since the shuffling of the community team.
No. If anything, that we're missing.
Hearing less.
Well, maybe they did it deliberately. Maybe they... Having a multi-headed Hydra dealing with the community is better than having the go-to guy. I don't know why they're deliberately trying to confuse everybody, but hey, mission accomplished.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, 1.3 will solve all, I'm sure. So yeah, free to play, maybe coming to a Star Wars The Old Republic installation near you, but let's say 2014.
Oh, hang on. There's one other little quote from, and there's no backup clip for this, so... But everyone can tell me what they think this means. He was talking about, Daniel Erickson again, talking about the new space mission and the something more revolutionary that is coming down the pipeline that isn't in this space, this upcoming space mission. And he says, what we're talking about in the future is revolutionary. We're talking about a completely different pixel space. Now, what's a pixel space?
That's nothing.
Gibberish. That is gibberish. I'm sorry.
No, it is. You're totally correct. And see, I'm in the minority. I still think the space part of the game should be just a minor sideline, and I don't give a crap if they're expanding it. But then I suppose if they come out with something absolutely standingly good that, you know, makes EVE Online look like a 2D shooter, then I'm changing my mind. But I'm not interested in off-the-rails space combat for the sake of it, but I think I'm very much in a minority there.
Well, if it added something useful, then it would be great. I mean, I've said it before, I say it again, I'd really like to see something like TIE Fighter.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. And in all honesty, I'd really prefer that they focus their resources on things that matter. Things that are important, things that people need, things that will retain people in the game and bring more people back in. I mean, it's nice if they add little silly things periodically, but one of the things coming up in this this update is Slash Iron Fist, which is a new animated emote based on one of the bosses. Who cares?
Yeah, I know.
I cannot tell you how much I don't care about that. What I do care about is the fact that they still haven't got the character to sit properly, and you can't get them to lie down either.
No, both very good points. And you still can't fish.
No. Something I've rediscovered the joy of in Rift, and being able to lie down. What is so difficult about getting your character to lie down? You type slash sleep, and what does he do? It says your character falls into a deep slumber. He's still standing there looking at you.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be able to do that, though.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's nice to be able to do that just for the heck of it. But, I mean, just being able to sit on the floor. Have you actually looked at the sitting animation?
Yeah, I've seen a few people see it's not pretty.
Look at the side of it. It's like a bloody Thunderbird getting up.
Yeah, it is.
It's just like a marionette being – with the strings are just dropped. It is the crap. I thought when I saw that in the beta, oh, they'll fix that. They haven't fixed it.
Yeah.
I know. Okay. There are many more important things that need sorting out, but rather than create slash Iron Fist, sort out the sitting animation, people.
It's
a bit messing. It's a bit of finishing, and there's some pretty ragged bits that need finishing, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, extremely good points. And I'll say for a third time, fishing. I love fishing in WoW.
I almost thought about subscribing to Rift just because I thought, I can swim. I can fish.
Yes.
I can lie down.
Because when you're a player of my quality, fishing kicks ass because you can still get achievements for doing nothing. And I've said it before, proudest day of my life in MMOs was winning the Stranglethorn fishing extravaganza. I was ready to take a year off and celebrate.
That's not easy to get.
No, I was just about wet myself.
I've never tried.
Yeah. So put that into... But, I mean, obviously from a lore viewpoint, fishing would be utterly ridiculous, but... One can only dream.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
So while you're on your high horse, which is standing on a soapbox, let's talk about you had a nice little article come out this week about that you called Wrong Revolution and talked about two other MMOs. Just give us the rundown on that. We'll have a bit of a chat about that.
Okay, I probably should have pulled the articles up, shouldn't I?
No, that's all right. Just make it up.
Okay, well, one of them, obviously most people would have heard of, Terra, which is out of South Korea. It's been around about 18 months. It launched in the US, I think, May of this year. So, and it's not zone restricted per se. So Aussies or Kiwis or any other Oceanic player. Are there any other Oceanic players? Doesn't matter.
Well, I think there are. I always mean to look that up on the map. I think there's a lot of minor islands and stuff. So apologies to if we keep overlooking you. Probably Norfolk Island and...
Niue? You can probably...
Niumea?
Yeah, depends on if your internet connection's good enough. Yes, you too could play Terra. it's quite a beautiful game. They've managed to wring an awful lot out of the Unreal 3 engine, which is a pretty capable engine anyway. Hero, which obviously Tor uses, I'm sure things will get better as they learn to utilize it better. But the benefit of an established engine is you don't have to do too much figuring out. So the designs are incredibly elaborate, especially for some of the bosses. The first ones you come across just when you start the game, they look like an end of zone boss in a lot of other games. They've gone absolutely crazy on it. Also employs a third person aiming system. So you actually have to have your crosshairs on what you're firing at or what you're trying to heal. So there's a lot more concentration. You really have to have situational awareness to get this to work. Otherwise, you are going to be spread all over the landscape very quickly. There's a lot of things in Terra that aren't innovative. In fact, they actually seem to have gone backwards. The questing is about as dull and grindy as you could possibly get. But it doesn't seem to matter quite so much because the combat's just fun and quite tricky, especially if you're easily distracted like I am. So that's one of them. Okay. Second one is an add-on that is DayZ or DayZ, depending on your preference. And that is an add-on for Armor 2 Plus, Operation Arrowhead, I think, which is the add-on. And that's even less fancy. The proprietary engine that the game uses does a really good job, so no problems there. But it's not trying to be glitzy. At night, it's pitch black. You cannot see a damn thing, unless you light a flare, which is sort of like a come kiss me card to any zombie or bandit that happens to be roaming around the place. And I've given it away, really, haven't I? Yes, it's full of zombies. It's a post-zombie apocalypse game. You just land on this beach. You've no idea where you are because there's no map. So you don't know what direction to go. Obviously, you don't go out to sea. So you've got three other directions you can go in. And within about 15 seconds of appearing there, you can already see zombies shambling around in the distance. And they can move. But all you have is your backpack, you've got some basic supplies, and that's really it. You have got to figure out where to go, what to do, and the most important thing you'd have to do, first of all, obviously, is find more supplies and find ammunition. Finding other players is not necessarily a good idea because some of them are bandidos and they will pop a cap in your head for half a tin of beans or whatever soda you've got laying around or even just for the hell of it. Some other players who are other survivors may help you. They may not. But really it comes down to just you, how much you're willing to trust other people and how much you're willing to betray someone you've just met or even someone you've actually banged around with in the game for a while. I think there's a lot more moral choices that will stay with you in a game like that than just going on a dialogue wheel.
Yeah.
But they're two very, very different games. But they both bring something quite different to the genre, and they're quite seductive in their own different ways.
I mean, I couldn't be bothered with Terra, but DayZ or DayZ appeals to me a lot. But I assume, so you've got to buy Armor 2, and then you buy this as an add-on, or you download as an add-on. It's not a purchasable thing, is it? It's a freebie.
It's a free mod. It was written by a Kiwi who was doing some work for the developer at the time, and he just did the DayZ. It's still in alpha, but it's still quite playable as long as you don't mind sort of keyboard origami for the UI. It's not terribly elegant just yet, but in all honesty, that might be part of its charm. Sometimes I think things are a little bit too easy in games. And, yeah, when you're a casual player and you just want to drop in and do something quickly and drop out, That's fine. Places where you can rub a magic glowing white orb and an invisible shuttle picks you up and drops you somewhere, or you have a hearthstone that magically transports you to another destination. It's very handy for the casual player, but if you want a bit of a challenge and you want something a bit more immersive and something that demands something of you, I don't know that those things really do us any favours.
In regards to Star Wars The Old Republic as well.
Well, I mean, Tor just lifted the idea from WoW and probably half a dozen other games that do exactly the same thing. It's a common enough mechanic, so I'm not pointing anything at BioWare when I say that. It's just a part of the evolution of the genre, and I'm just wondering if it's a good evolution in some ways.
Yeah, for starters, I want more zombies in Star Wars The Old Republic and fishing zombies that you've got to kill to get the fishing rods.
But then, and then the zombies will come and kill you for the fishing rod.
Yeah, see, I'm totally subscribing for 5 years just for that. So I know.
We need to talk. I know someone who can probably help you.
No, I know. BioWare listened to every word of this podcast, so I guarantee you they've just put two devs on that starting tomorrow. And I won't even charge them.
No, but that's very good of you. But I suppose the main thrust of the article was, both Terra and DayZ are games that are getting a lot of enthusiasm from a lot of people at the moment. And it's really a case of, with all the time and resources that BioWare put into the voice over and the dialogue, was, in hindsight, and obviously you can only do these things in hindsight, was that the right thing to really make the point of differentiation? Now, one of the good things about playing other games and then coming back to Tor is you realise that how much easier the cutscenes and the voice acting, how much more engaging they make things. Going back to reading quest text, you know, it's not that great. But in all honesty, if you spacebar through most of this stuff anyway, it probably doesn't make much of a difference to you.
That's the crucial point. If you're not listening to the story, then, yeah,
it's wasted.
Tor has nothing, because you're right, you're just space barring through it, which I refuse to do. The only time I do that is if I'm like leveling up this trooper who's doing some similar quest to McConchula or identical quest, and I'm just space barring through that. But then I'm still ploughing through Diablo 3, and I'm enjoying the text based stuff. Well, I suppose there's voice for that though as well. You get both, like you do in SWTOR. So I'm spoiled by that now. So that's one good thing, I suppose. Future MMOs won't be able to get away with just text.
Yeah, I think at the very least you need voiceover. You need some sort of dialogue, but you don't necessarily need the elaborate dialogue trees.
That's right. But what blows my mind with Diablo 3 is I know someone, Gail, who's playing Diablo 3 and doesn't use the sound at all. And got to sort of level 27 or something. So I'm getting a bit bored and I'm a bit stuck. And I went, and she keeps saying, I haven't had the sound on the whole time. It's like, that's half the point of that game, is the atmosphere. Although, you know, I could see I'd get bored by level 27 if I didn't have the atmospherics of that game, which are pretty amazing.
Yeah. And that's part of a role playing game. Even if you're not an RPer and you're a bit more hardcore about the whole thing. About, you know, your other player mechanics, that's all fine. But I bet you even the most hardcore are still affected by atmospheric elements. At some level, in some way, they are immersed in it.
Exactly. And I think with SWTOR that, like, the voice has been pivotal, but the other atmospherics haven't been that brilliant. Well, they've not been immersive, I've found, anyway. The music's done well, as far as you know, you're on a big boss and stuff like that, but I still think they could have done a little bit better.
Mm. Yeah, well, I don't think we're actually looking at the finished game yet, quite honestly.
No.
Again, sorry everyone, this is my third DC Universe Online reference, this podcast, but there's a lot of parallels between that game and this one, in that the product that it was highly anticipated, it was released very popular for the first couple of months, and then as the problems and the things that simply didn't work and stuff, that basic stuff that really should have been done before it was released, people just started tuning out, and then it basically ended up, it didn't die, but it it contracted to such a point that it was is ridiculous. Now it's doing very well, thanks to the changes they've made. But I went back in recently and I was just looking around the place and thinking, I don't remember it looking this good. I don't remember it being this... It was. I always enjoyed it, but I don't remember it being that fun. And they really, whatever the changes they've made, they've really done well. So I'm thinking that BioWare is probably going to take a similar track. I think they released the least they could get away with.
Yeah.
Hoping that they'd be able to get everything else sorted out while people were leveling up. And of course, we know that that doesn't work.
No.
It didn't work. But as I mentioned before, someone managed to get through all of Diablo 3 in 12 and a half hours. So, you know, how do you plan for a player like that? You can't.
No, I don't think you should plan for them. You should persecute them, if anything.
Yeah, exactly. So I think EA pressured BioWare to get as much out the door as get it out the door as quickly as possible, and we ended up with something that wasn't quite finished.
But 1.3, it'll fix everything.
1.3 is going to be another significant step forward, and
no, it'll fix everything.
Oh right, okay.
No, it's I think the
next Jesus patch.
No, you raise a good point. I think 1.4 or 1.5 maybe is where you start to go, okay, this is a really well-rounded, engaging game. I'm hoping so anyway.
I think that'll probably happen. I mean, it's still a good game. I have to admit, I've gotten a little bit, my Bounty Hunters, and yes, folks, I still don't have a level 50. I'm taking my time. Give me a break. And I've got so many alts, I can't count them anymore. But I got a bit bored of my Bounty Hunter, Hoth, and sort of, is, forgive the pun, is leaving me cold. So I started up my first Inquisitor. I'm having an absolute ball with him. I'm beginning to wonder, though, if the stories are more engaging at the beginning and they sort of tend to get a bit sort of, as you get further in.
Yeah, that's what I find, to be honest.
Because the Bounty Hunter one, okay, spoiler alert, any Bounty Hunters, or if you're planning to play a Bounty Hunter, do not listen to the next minute. The Bounty Hunter quest, once you finish the Great Hunt and you end up doing the Blacklist, okay, all right, so I'm doing the same thing but different. And what's worse, I don't even have the end game, so to speak. I'm doing this to improve my credibility with the Mandalorians, but to what end? There's no goalpost here. So unless I've missed something, which is entirely possible. And I don't know whether they have to leave things open-ended to a point in order to provide more story content, although some of the things that has been said by some of the devs recently makes me wonder if class storyline isn't quite the priority it was. I'm just not quite sure where we're all going to end up with this. So
yeah.
I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful, but I'm not having any expectations. I don't think that's a good idea with these sorts of things. It's their first MMO. They're a very capable company.
Yeah.
The trouble is they're very capable at doing one thing, which was the single player game. You know, the Dragon Age 2 they didn't do, so you can't blame them for that. But that's what they know, and I think they're still having to kind of work out how to make what they know how to do well and just kind of knead it and massage it so that it works as an MMO as well.
No, if that makes sense. Agree violently. You just raised a good point about end content. I mean, I only hit level 50, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or whatever it was. And one interesting thing is going up to level 50, I did minimal PvP. I did zero space combat. I just tried to, you know, complete most of the quests in each area. And once a quest line was done, I'd move on to the next planet. So I hit level 50 and I still had to play probably a good 2 or 3 hours of time before I actually got to the end of the story. And again, spoiler alert for anyone that doesn't have a level 50, and I'm assuming the end part is slightly different based on your class, but essentially you end up with the end of episode 4 where you've got everyone in a big room cheering and clapping you as you've, you know, saved everyone, saved the Republic. And I assume on the Empire side, it's some a mirror image of that. Mm. And it was extremely good, extremely well done compared to WoW or whatever. We hit, you know, level cap even in vanilla, and it wasn't quite as neat a wrap-up. But if you're someone that's done a lot of space combat and a lot of PvP, you've got to do a lot of playing once you hit level 50 before you actually get to the end of the story, which I think is one of the reasons people are put off a little bit. It doesn't feel like it ends unless you've got that dedication to make sure you see the quest right through.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that's one of the things I've actually tried to do with my Inquisitor, is just focus as much as possible on the class storyline, A, because I don't really want to do all the world arcs again as any more than I have to, but B, because I just want to try and stay on that narrative line and just keep the inertia of the story going, just to see what that feels like, just to see how compelling it is. And so far, so good. Somehow he got his spaceship at level 13. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but most of my other characters haven't been able to get their ship until around 15, 16. Yeah. He was doing something right, clearly. He just doesn't know what it was. But, yeah, it's interesting playing Alts because you can just give it a shot and just see what different takes or what different directions you could take. I don't mean decisions as far as your dialogue choices, but just ways to play.
Yeah, there's no shortage of options.
No. I think if you did your flashpoints and you did your class quests and maybe a bit of PvP, I reckon you could probably bypass most of the world arcs. Certainly gonna do that for Taris.
Yeah, I was about to mention Taris. Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, no MMA can balance it so that when you hit 50, you complete the storyline. That's just impossible, or it would be so on the rails that it would drive people insane. Mm-hmm. But I was just surprised that I purposely took a minimalist approach as far as PvP and space combat and still had a lot to play before I finished the story. So someone that's done a lot of that stuff has got a bit of a weight.
Yeah.
If they've, as you said, if they've done the world arcs. And which, you know, to be fair, a lot of that is the kill 16 of this stuff. There is a lot more to it than that, though. There's some good stories in there as well.
Yes. Hunt. Well, there's sort of hunt one of five bosses, hunt two of five bosses and so forth. But
yeah. Oh, and that's the other thing on the minimalist thing is I did basically two or three of the heroic areas leveling up as well, just because the server was fairly quiet at the time and the times I was playing, and I was also lazy and not bothering to team up with people. So, you know, it was very minimalist and still had a lot to play. So I'm not sure the timing's quite right there.
No, and you can actually, obviously you have to sort of work it out as you go, but I sometimes like going into heroic to areas that are, you know, they absolutely spifflicate me if I'm not really careful. And I think that's part of the same sort of appeal that something like DayZ would provide, except it's something that you can do in Tor, is go into an area where you really have to be very careful how you approach, whether you can kite a three-man mob or a two-man mob. And can you have a two-man mob? I suppose you can.
Yeah.
But just sort of managing and herding, and so you can work, because you have to work your way through carefully, because if you pull two mobs, you're dead. You're dead before you can even spell dead.
Yeah.
D-E-D.
And that's one of the things I'm looking forward to going back now, is soloing some areas and doing exactly that, pushing the limits of certain things, but also enjoying the bits where you just breeze through it. And it's a bit of fun. I really think I'm a solo player. I'm not set out for this MMO stuff.
It is. I've got to admit, it's when you find a team that you're constantly yelling at, it can be really good. I'm not a big fan of pugs. There's just way too much that can go wrong with a pug.
Yeah, but that's what amuses me. See, I don't mind a pug for that reason, but they can be frustrating, you're quite right.
Oh, there's just so many jerks out there. Sorry, jerk, whoever you are.
Yeah, no, we don't have jerks. We only have brilliant people listen to this.
Yes.
So, yeah, good discussion.
Yes, I think we sort of got off topic because weren't we supposed to be talking about free-to-play?
No, no, we got past that and we're doing the wrong revolution. So, no, we've well and truly covered all that. We'd usually have a lore update from Ed now, but hopefully Ed will be back next fortnight. I know we've talked about a couple of suggestions for the next lore update, so Ed will be back with one of them. The last two things I wanted to cover, first, guilds. On toros.com.au, we have a guild listing, which is now probably 2 months out of date, and I'm still getting some lovely guilds email in with updates or new guilds to add to the listing. I'll reply to people, but at this stage, the time taken in maintaining that listing, when there's some really good resources on the official forums and other areas to find a guild, I'd rather be spending the time, you know, finding good news around SWTOR or whatever than keeping that guild list. So I'm probably going to disable that. So if people feel really strongly otherwise, let us know. But it's just not worth the time when there are other good resources there. So apologies for that. And then, as we mentioned last fortnight, Simon and I and possibly Mark will be at Oz Comic Con, which is next weekend in Melbourne, so the 30th of June and the 1st of July. I'll be there all day on the 30th of June doing some different things, and Simon, you'll be there in the afternoon. So we'll probably do a bit of a recording session for the next podcast there. But if you're going, just send us an email, contact@toros.com.au, or look out for the two sexiest guys who aren't in cosplay gear, unless you're going cosplay, Simon.
No, the Darth Vader suit's too hot.
Yeah, I know.
And I can't see out the helmet.
So, yeah, we'd love to catch up with anyone that plays the game. Sort of, I'm going to be running in and out of panels and stuff, but it'd be lovely to have a chat. So let us know if that's the case. And still got butterflies about shaking Stan Lee's hand, and I'll make sure I don't shake it too hard so I don't break his hand, given he's about turn 90. Poor bugger. Or lucky bugger, probably, is the better view.
Well, he's rich.
He's rich and successful and still kicking. So yep. What else would you want? So, yes, we'd love to see you there. And anything else from you, Simon?
No, nothing specific. I won't be doing anything official or clever or worthwhile like you. I'll just probably be standing in the concourse trying to count how many fat Batman I see. There will be a few.
I'm going to be taking lots of photos, and I'm not doing anything that exciting. I just pay for the privilege of meeting Stanley. But, yeah, I'm covering the con for bleedingcool.com. If there are any comic nerds out there, they'll have probably heard of Bleeding Cool. So that's a pleasure, and I'm covering the comic side of things at the convention for them. Hopefully catch up with some good Aussie artists and writers and interview them and take lots of photos, and I'll let you know when that's all up. But yeah, Fat Batman, and I'm happy to spend some time buying comics.
Yes. That would also be good. Oh, there is one quick thing I should mention. I almost forgot. When the 1.3 patch drops, if any of you have difficulty with it, it may be your antivirus software. On the PTS, the client has actually been triggering a false positive with some antivirus programs which have been deleting it, which was actually what was causing some of my difficulty getting on there in the first place, because the client had been erased, which would sort of do it. Or your antivirus might actually end up blocking access, which was the other problem I was having. So, yeah, just word to the wise. They probably will have fixed it for the patch update, but just in case, that might be the first thing to look at.
Damn rat ghoul virus.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Potter, for hanging in with us, doing the duo. We did okay.
Yeah, we just rambled a bit.
Nah, rambling's good. And yeah, I'm impressed we've hit nearly an hour and just the two of us. So we'll be back in a fortnight. As always, contact@toros.com.au, Twitter, SWTOROZ, Facebook, the same, facebook.com/SWTOROZ. And I don't know why I mentioned Google Plus anymore, but we've got a Google Plus page. And that's about it. You don't have Twitter, do you, Simon, or one that you want to give away?
I do, but it's spasmodic at best.
All right. So there you go.
If anyone wants to see the whatever half-assed, semi-conscious things I say, RPG beats RL. That's RPG beats real life.
I like that. That's a good handle.
No, it just means I've got no life.
So, yes, thanks, everyone. And we'll be talking to you for episode 36 in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
See ya.
From the coldest depths of interstellar space to the nastiest packed urban sprawls of Coruscant, this was Flashpoint.